Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hello, Miami Nice listeners. This is Katie Walsh. I just wanted to hop on briefly before this episode and offer a little bit of context and also to talk about the sort of unexpected hiatus that we took on the podcast. So this episode was recorded in late May, right before the Black Lives Matter movement in the United States took on a new urgency after the murder of George Floyd and also after the murder of Breonna Taylor at the hands of police officers. I don't know how any person can witness the brutality of those murders and the violence that the police here in the United States unleashed on peaceful protesters without coming away from that profoundly changed. I know that I came away from it profoundly changed. And as the United States is going through this painful reckoning with how we understand the function of police in our everyday lives, that my personal beliefs have also radically changed. And I firmly believe that we need to defund the police in the United States. So that has also radically changed my relationship to cinematic representations of the police. And obviously that means our favorite undercover vice cops, Crockett and Tubbs from Miami Vice. So in the heat of all of the uprising and the protests that were happening in early June, I attended a protest here in LA, and was involved in donating and doing whatever I could to sort of understand what was going on, and changing our relationship to policing here. I just didn't really feel comfortable doing a podcast about a film that had police officers as protagonists. I was going through a lot in understanding my own beliefs and the way that they were changing and coming to adopt the defund the police movement. And I just didn't feel like it was the right time for me to talk about it, for me to promote that. And I couldn't do the podcast in the same way. And honestly, I think my approach to this podcast will probably be changed for the duration. I am changing. Our country is changing. And so my relationship to this film is changing, because as a critic, it is so important for me to position films within cultural context, whether that's what they're trying to say about the world in which those films were created or how we understand those films in the world that we exist in today. So as a writer, I have tried to tangle with depictions of law enforcement, but things have changed so dramatically for me and for our whole country since June that I have really needed to take some time. And I know a lot of other critics and writers have started to look at their own relationships to depictions of law enforcement in film and TV as well. And even the industry is starting to question those things too. So there was always necessarily going to be a change in how I related to this film. And I had to just process that. But I do think that this podcast is the type of place where Blake and I can have those conversations and kind of unpack the way we feel about this film and to talk about the complicated and challenging feelings that we might have about cinematic depictions of law enforcement. And I do think that one of the interesting things about this movie is that it is nuanced. It's not necessarily just propaganda. It is something that is dealing with different shades of morality and right and wrong. And it is interesting to see how Michael Mann evolves in his career and how he approaches depictions of law enforcement. And that's something that we can definitely talk about. So thank you for your patience. And I hope you enjoy this episode, which, as I said before, was recorded a few months ago at the end of May. But it was such an entertaining conversation about the women in Miami Vice, and I wanted folks and fans of the podcast to be able to hear that. So here it is. Enjoy. Thank you, guys.
Jazz.
Jazz. Welcome to Miami Nice.
Welcome to Miami Nice.
Oh, this is now the fourth episode. Mojito time. And because it was serious, as we said in the last episode, just got a little something, something. A little sidecar. A little sidecar, as Katie called it.
That's allowed.
Because...
We just need to supplement the mojito. Yeah.
We just, just alternating feelings for the day. Last time we talked about handlebar mustaches extensively. And Sam Elliott, we talked about on our second episode, accents of three characters. But this episode, we're going to talk about something that, like, both of us genuinely love about this movie. And I think is underrated deeply about this movie. And that is adult relationships.
Yes. And, I will admit that I didn't really appreciate the relationships until I started watching the film more. Mm. And, I think the first time I saw it, it was just like, oh God, they're in the shower again. but now it's like when you kind of can, when you're just taking in separate elements of the movie repeatedly, as we are, or on that rewatch, which is something that people say about Miami Vice all the time, that it's so rewatchable. Like, I just appreciate how adult the romantic relationships are. And, the shower scene with Trudy and Tubbs, I think is so interesting because the first time we see nudity or intimacy is like this very sweet moment where they're just sort of washing each other's backs and having a little moment. And it's like very sweet. And it's totally looks like the kind of moment you would have with like a serious partner. And it's not, salacious and
no.
Yeah. So it really
starts out really tense. Like I was looking, it's going to be anyone who's listening to the show is going to love this. It's like, I started today watching that scene on a loop. Now,
yeah, you did.
It wasn't for the reasons that everyone is going to think straight away, but just wanted to see how the scene started. And the scene actually starts with like a guy, like Jamie Foxx's Tubbs pouring over his cuticles. Like he's in the shower, his hands are in the shower. Man sort of gets his hands there. He's sort of like washing himself. He's a million miles away. And then the gorgeous Naomi Harris obviously rolls into the shower. And we just get this like very tasteful, but also like one of those sort of sexy moments where you're like, man, these two have all of the right shape and all of the right muscles. They are just outstanding. It's like, thank you, Michael Mann, for this early giving me a moment where I get to appreciate the naked bodies of these two beautiful people. Mm-hmm. But you're so right. Then it just transitions into like, I'm going to wash his back. It's not unusual for these two people who have done this. And then he's like, I'm going to bounce. And I love this, the intimacy of this scene, because in so many like crime movies and just any action movies, action thrillers, when there's like a relationship that is burning really hot, but is just going to explode and go into cinders, it just all like everything's so quick. But he's like, I'm going to bounce. And he's like, then he goes down to lay in bed and she's like, bitch, I wash your back.
Yeah.
You wash mine. This is how this works. Right. And so it's really nice to actually see that inversion a little bit and that little bit of playfulness and fun and how that all like transpires, because up until this point there's really no like lead that they're together.
Right. I was going to say, like, this is the first indication that we have that they're a couple, and you're at first sort of like, whoa, like what, why is she walking into the shower? But then the warmth and the intimacy between them is like so natural that you're like, oh, they're obviously longtime partners. So, yeah, I think he captures that really well. And, the framing I noticed in all of the sex scenes for the most part is really on faces. And both of the faces together. So in the sex scene with Jamie Foxx and Naomi Harris, like it's mostly on his back and then it's just their faces and then maybe a couple little insert shots, but it's not, it is really about their connection and not about like salaciousness or like, yeah, these guys are getting laid, buddy. It's like, how about we have a real relationship between equals, and he like really cares about her. And I think that his care for her is like his driving factor throughout the movie and why he takes this situation so seriously, because he fears for her.
And it's such a nice, it's a nice sex scene because it starts out completely, it completely changes your expectations of what their relationship are, but what the movie is when it's talking about male and female relationships, because it's like, it starts out with him performing or fake performing really badly. And she's like, oh, I'm just joking. And then like they laugh and then it becomes a little bit more tender and sweet, but it's just like, not every movie is going to be the bad sex experience. And not every movie is going to be the like, the Terminator 1 Michael Biehn and Linda Hamilton sweatbox experience. It's going to be like a tender relationship that something happens, or like, an, you know, whatever it is, 9.5 weeks, or like people go to the fridge and, you know, eat a 3-course meal off of one another. Like, that's not what this is. It's just, it's like a really sweet connection together. And it actually, it's like, it's a connection that kind of makes, it's so funny. Like, it has a blushing effect on you sometimes when you watch it. And it's funny because it goes into the next scene with Colin Farrell as Sonny. He has a bit of a blush when he sees Trudy in the robe. Oh, have I lost you?
Oh no. Now we're back on. Yeah. Okay.
Got you back. Cool. But yeah, he has this moment where he's sort of blushing and she's like, hey, Trudy. Like, hey, Sonny. Like, start talking. I'm not just a woman. Oh, and he's like, oh, sort of shaken out of like, oh, sorry, we can get back to work now. Right. This is not an awkward couple moment.
Right. And yeah, I love that. I mean, I think the thing about that sex scene that's great is like, it does feel very realistic and authentic, and that like, yeah, it's not going to be some like crazy athletic thing. It's like, you know, going to just be like, haha, we're like joking around with each other. And yeah. And then I love how, you know, exactly like what you said, where she's just so sort of like unabashed, like, who cares? Like, you know, I'm in a relationship with him, so like, get over it. We're all working together. So yeah, I really love the women of Miami Vice, and especially Naomi Harris, who is just so great, and how
she's good.
You know, aside from the relationship aspect, like, both of the main female characters, Trudy and Isabella, are sort of introduced as these, like, I think I said on a couple episodes ago, like these like heavies, like Trudy is sort of like hanging back. I mean, we see her in the club in the beginning, but then in the scene with Nicholas, she's like, I'm gonna, you know, fucking beat your ass up or whatever she said. Like, I was just rewatching it. She gets some pretty good licks in on him. Like,
she's like, fuck that. She's like, fuck that. I love how she points at him and says that. So good.
And then, and with Isabella, it's like, you know, we only see her in that my other favorite scene with Jose Hierro and Jamie Foxx doing a tete-a-tete, and she's like in the corner, like, you know, like, we just don't even see her. She's just like, I'm the bad guy in the corner. So they're like the kind of men that, you know, they're absolutely equal on the same level. But the relationships that they have with these guys are like very adult and very intimate and very tender. And I love when they go to Miami or to Cuba.
The Cuba stuff's outstanding. Like, I think if you were to watch, if there's like, you know, we've talked about it a couple of times, Michael Mann himself, like at the beginning of the commentary track for what's called like the director's definitive edition or whatever. He sort of starts the whole commentary track out with this whole like diatribe about like, it's the director's cut was what I shot in the theater. Like, that was it. And essentially what he's done is shot a more close to the shooting script version of the movie before he changed his mind for what was actually theatrical release. He's like, I'm going to put a few things back in. If there was one thing that I wish was in the theatrical release, like, because I think it's superior, it's the coffee house conversation with Trudy and Ricardo after their engagement with, like, Archangel de Jesus Montoya. Like, when they have that van scene, there's this amazing scene. Mm-hmm. And I'll go and get the actor's name because he's just absolutely
wonderful. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but it's Louis
Tozar is the guy's Tozar, name. He's so great. And he does this great scene and he's sitting there with Isabel, who's his money manager. He's sitting there with the boys and he's like, I don't buy a service, I buy a result. He has that great scene. We're going to talk about it on the show eventually, but I'm just sort of glossing over it for context. And he says, like, you know, and I wish my best to your family. And
right.
The boys in the theatrical cut don't get the extended scene that happens in the director's definitive edition, which is at the end of them driving away in this convoy of, like, vehicles that has, like, CIA telephone blocking technology. They have, when their phone signal comes back up, he calls Trudy and's like, how are you? Is everything okay? And she's like, yeah, like, she's in their safe house. She's in their fake safe house where they were talking previously. And she's like, oh, thanks for the $500 worth of yellow roses.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, Archangel de Jesus Montoya's, like, signal of, like, hey, I know who works for me. I know where you're vulnerable. I know what's going to happen. And in the director's definitive edition, the cafe scene is directly after that. Is a scene where Tubbs goes to Trudy and is like, you're in danger. I don't know if we should pull the plug. He knew where you were. Like, I don't know if we should allow that. And it's this great scene because Naomi Harris gets, like, to steer the movie back into the direction that we eventually take, which is like, no, we knew he was going to find me. He should find me. Like, he should find me. Don't think about me because you're in a much more precarious position than me. Like, I'm still in the United States. You're undercover in another country dealing drugs. If you get caught, this whole shit goes down. And it's such a great scene for her agency to be like, no, our relationship's important, but if you think about me and that distracts you from the job that you're doing, then you're completely fucked and you need to be focused on the task at hand. Otherwise you're in deep, 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 deep trouble. And so I love that, like, in this director's definitive edition, she has such a big part in, like, no, stay the course. And then basically Ricardo for the rest of the movie is taking that cue, like, stay focused, stay the course, push, keep driving. Like, and she kind of gives him that motivation to, like, no, clear your head. You got a job to do. It's a really cool scene.
I totally agree that, theatrical cut is the best, but I do think that that scene with the yellow roses and then the scene in the cafe are
so good.
Crucial for understanding Tubbs and understanding what's motivating him and, like, when he is more cautious versus when Crockett is not, and you know, just, like, how serious it is for him. And I think that, like, that the sex scene and the shower scene that we see, like, that establishes, like, the nature of their relationship. It's not just, you know, beautiful people having sex. It's like, no, we need to understand who these people are. And then I think the scene with the flowers.
But we're allowed to appreciate for this show exclusively. Hot damn. Yeah. They are definitely beautiful people having sex.
They are. Thank you for the casting.
Thank you for the casting.
Thank you for the casting.
Thank you, Uncle Man.
Yeah. But, you know, it never feels icky. Like, I think what you said, you know, that there, you kind of get a little, like, shy. I think that comes from the intimacy. I think that comes from, like, feeling like you're actually witnessing two people, like, love each other and being like, oh, I shouldn't, like, look at this because this is, like, a private moment. But yeah, I love, and you know what's interesting about I think if you listen to the director's commentary, he says that that was, like, a real move that those drug dealers would do, those drug kingpins would do, is, like, send flowers and, like, do those kinds of intimidation tactics to just fuck people up and mentally.
I would strongly recommend, if you haven't, like, we're going to tell you to watch this movie 10,000 times, like, throughout the course of this show, but that scene, those scenes, Michael Mann's explanation of, like, the interview that he did with a real undercover operative that had essentially this thing happen that inspired the scene in the movie. is some of the most chilling stuff you're ever going to hear. Like, to imagine that you're undercover and like, this guy was a real asset. He was undercover and not his fake mother, not his fake girlfriend, his real mother received flowers from your friends in the South. Like, basically going, I can penetrate all of your false stuff and I can find out who you are. And if you don't deliver for me, you're in deep trouble. And like, really great. It's so cool. It's a, that whole thing is so great.
Yeah. We should make like a syllabus of like extraneous materials. Like, it's like, you have to watch the commentary. You have to watch Roadhouse.
You have to watch Roadhouse. You've got to watch Point Break.
I also like, I would suggest, have you ever seen like the Cocaine Cowboys documentaries?
Yes.
Which like, those are very 80s, but I also think that they like really inform just like the world, I think, that Michael Mann was thinking about. And then, especially when the TV show was being developed and that he wanted to be, you know, he wanted it to be a movie at that time. But like, shit was fucking crazy. Like,
but you're right about the second, when you look at the second Cocaine Cowboys, like when you truly see what the global footprint of this business is, I think that that's where you start to take the steps towards what Michael Mann's talking about really in Miami Vice in 2006, because it's like the first one, like, it's crazy, but it feels like it's focused. Whereas like the second one, it's like, oh no, the whole world buys this shit. The whole world is in on this. And I love that. I think it's really, but I think a Miami Vice syllabus is going to have to come together.
Yeah.
We're going to share it amongst each other. And then once it's ready, it'll be on oneheatminute.com in our blog. There'll be a syllabus there. We'll update it with movie suggestions and soundtrack suggestions.
Mandy Moore, please. We'll be on there.
Respect to Mandy Moore. Where she's at.
for the official record. But then we should link to like Bilga's pieces and Brendan's pieces.
Yeah, Brendan. Like Jacob Knight, another guy who's written a great piece. Yeah, we'll make sure we add that whole curriculum there so everyone's got like where we're at.
And didn't someone send us, like, someone from Argentina was going to like tip us off about like...
Wait, I'm finding it.
We
had an amazing piece of correspondence that I'm going to go and find right now that like made our week. So we're going to go find it.
Listen,
I'm going to go quickly
find
it.
We take tips.
Oh,
We take tips. We're going to get all the BTS, all the behind the scenes that we can take. We will take. We'll take anonymous tips. You know, we'll take anything that we can get. But apparently Colin Farrell was wiling out in Buenos Aires post.
We've got reports, which I'll
reports
find.
Reports have come in.
reports have come into the show about the fact that it was parts of the movie were shot in the Dominican Republic. And then also because they're based in South America, different places in South America were taking place, you know, were shooting locations for other, you know, taking stock of that. And there was...
Was it Montevideo?
Montevideo, that's right. And the Buenos Aires became a holiday and potentially party destination. So I'm just going to go and find, because we had a report come in that there are some stories of Colin Farrell at the time of Miami Vice partying with none other than Diego Maradona, speaking of Cocaine Cowboys. And we even got a picture come in. Ah, here it is.
Wait, was that who that was?
Yes. So it is at Elmetalesi. So Elmetalesi. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that completely butchering it. I'm so sorry. They just go by J in their bio. And this is exactly what came through to us, which is Colin Farrell with blonde hair at the time of Miami Vice is kissing Diego Maradona on the mouth in a photo. By the way, this is from Jay, from that Twitter handle I just quoted, on the 15th of May. By the way, Montevideo doubled for Havana in Miami Vice. Farrell spent some nights off in Buenos Aires. His party trail is legendary. I think he met Maradona. He finished and went straight to rehab. Then, like, three tweets later is a photo, which will be in this episode, of him kissing Diego Maradona. It is unbelievable. And we've already said we need the Colin party report. So that great
send person. Send us the party report.
that might be a whole episode, the party report of Colin Farrell for this show. But I outstanding. Outstanding.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. Wait, we're totally off what we were talking about, which was
what
like
what were we talking about? Serious relationships.
Serious relationships and beautiful sex scenes, absolutely stunning sex scenes. But I just quickly before we don't talk about this, but I really do love the scene, the trip to Havana.
I love
the trip to Havana. I'm imagining Rob and Steve. Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan.
We need the trip to Havana.
But no, I
yes. We need it.
Actually, my dad used to go to Cuba before it was open. So my dad would like sneak into Cuba. Yes. And he would, he said the food was horrible. I mean, communist Cuba, like they didn't have a lot, but yeah, he said the food was horrible. But yeah, so he would sneak in all the time. He's been like 6 times. My whole family's been to Cuba many times, except for me. And it's absolute torture that I haven't been, but
post ISO goals.
I know, seriously. When I can get on a plane again, my ass is going straight to Cuba.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Cuba. I really do enjoy the sequence of them, their weekend together. And it's so vibes. It's so mood. It's so atmosphere. It's just like, I don't really give a shit what they're talking about. I just want to like look at them and like, but yeah. I do, the sex scene that they have is it's shot the same way, but friggin' Chris Cornell is wailing his ass off. And I'm just like,
I was watching that today and I'm like, so, you know, it leads up, it's got all this great motivation, you know,
the dancing,
I want to get it right because Michael Mann talked about it. He called it medalist syndrome, which is like something that happens, and which you guys can Google, like you can figure it out for yourselves, but it's called medalist syndrome. And it's basically undercover people who get to this point where they think that they're like Teflon when they're untouchable. Mm-hmm. And so the whole motivation of the scene is like, I wanted to get to a guy who just negotiated something, who'd won, like they'd stolen the drugs, they gave it back to them, they negotiated the second deal. So all these things in his head, like these little dopamine rushes, incentivize him to like, all right, I'm going to go after this chick, even though I don't know if she's actually the boss's girl. Like at this stage, he doesn't really know what the hell their relationship is. And there's all that motivation, but the second they get in that boat, it's just, like you said, it is just mood and tension and electricity, and they are just like, you know, it's forget the dialogue, it's the cinching of a seatbelt, it's watching these glorious shots, you know. There's this hilarious moment in the commentary track and Michael Mann's like, 70 miles an hour in a boat is fast, and like it happens at the same time the boat is like streaming through water. You're like, yeah, 70 miles an hour is fast in a, like really fast, and so
on a car
in a car it's fast, but on the water this thing's like flying through the air, and he's like, oh, that's Colin driving. And you're like, oh my God, like Colin Farrell's driving that boat. But it's, you know, from a crazy technical and like tangible bit. But like when you just get back into the mood of the movie and you forget what it is, it's like their connection there. And then body's moving and she looks amazing. She's in this gorgeous dress. He's just sipping a mojito, like doing as I'm doing, like taking lime out of his mustache every 5 seconds in this show. And he's, you know, it's a good mojito. Yeah. Do you dance? And then the dancing happens. And it's just like, there's just weird things that happen like in that scene, usually choices with a director, you know, fabrics tend to be something that you always want to look perfect. You don't want to see them stretch or like go around, but like it's super attractive in this weird way of like seeing Colin Farrell's jacket like bend and like move with his dance moves. And you see her like her shoulder strap slip down. It's just these great like little touches that Michael Mann keeps in. And it's like, it's all about this like tangible experience of those two making this connection. And it's so great. And it's so powerful. And then you get to this needle drop of Chris Cornell. And I like, I nearly like, cried. I nearly cried laughing because I just thought about you. I'm like, oh, Katie would hate this needle drop so much. It's not like.
I just want to say, I loved it. I love Chris Cornell. I love Chris Cornell. I think he's amazing. Like I adore Soundgarden, but like all those, like just watching. I'm sorry, I can't even say it. Like, just like him, like, just like caterwauling over them, like, you know, over their sex scene. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. This is just like, it's just like too 2006 for me.
Yeah, it's a big 2006 audio slave mood. Because Collateral is like got that great needle drop from Audio Slave in it. And you're like, oh, great. And then, this is all like brand new stuff that even comes out before their third. I was like, I think it coincides with their third album or second album or something like that. But like, I just remember like when I watched it originally, I loved it. But now I think you've started to you've termited into my brain. So now when I hear it, I'm like, oh, this is bad.
But I poisoned the well.
Oh, you poisoned it. But it's you know, forgetting the needle drop. It's a great scene and what Mann's trying to convey. And I think they do it really well. I don't know if they do it as well just in like the intimacy, because the intimacy still feels like super passionate and super spontaneous and super crazy. But it's when he's talking to her about like, this is what my dad did in a bar.
Yeah.
And they're together. That scene is so electric to me. Like, I've actually got it for freeze framed on my TV, like right now as we've been talking.
And is that the postcoital?
The postcoital chat where they're just like chatting. That scene is out of control good.
So good. Obsessed.
Because they talk and it's so like natural, and then they go like, they kind of forget themselves and then they go, we shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, what, you know, we're already out on the edge. Let's stay here. Basically I'm completely paraphrasing, but it's just, it's that energy of those two having that connection. There's nothing sexier in the world. Like, you want to go and wear linen and have a mojito with someone you care about in a bar in Havana.
I think there's like a shot towards the end, like where they're just sort of like standing outside the little house or like condo. And you're just like, yeah, oh God, like transport. Maybe it's just isolation, but I'm just like, take me there to the balcony by the sea with Colin Farrell's mustache.
But what's... I can't remember if it's in theatrical. I've got to have a look at it again because sometimes the lines blur between both. But
yeah.
There's a moment where she takes him a cup of coffee. It's just before they go to the bar, actually. She takes him a cup of coffee up the stairs, and it's like her grandmother or someone is like her old grandmother's there. And like when you realize that she's taken him to her like family home, that's where you're like, oh, I don't know if they realize how serious this is. And then the intimacy keeps going after the nighttime, and then they're just, you know, almost scared to like even let go of grasping each other. It just is such, it's an electric scene, and you just you just want to run away with it. It's so great.
You know what I think is interesting? If you like put the two relationships, if you like juxtapose them, it's like the Trudy Tubbs relationship is so real. It's like grounded. He's like, we work together. You live in the same city that I live in. Like, I'm actually scared for your safety, and this is going to motivate me to like continue doing a good job. And then the Tubbs Isabella relationship is just pure fantasy. And I think the way that he shoots both of these things and presents them to us and is like, oh my, like you just want to go on that crazy Cuban weekend. And it really has that vibe of like stealing away with like a boyfriend or girlfriend. And you know, that like, where you're just like, I don't even know what the reality of the world is anymore. I'm not even connected to it. And like, he starts suggesting these like crazy things to her and you're just like, the balls on this guy. But you know, it's fantasy land.
But he tries, I totally agree. Because it is. That's what's so fun about it. It is fantasy land. And then there's a couple of moments where he starts to get a grip on what reality is again. And he starts to suggest like, what happens after fantasy land? And he's like, you should try and get out. And you're like, God. Like, it's so stressful because you're like, you need to stop talking. You need to stop talking to her right now because you're digging a hole that is... And it's fortunate that it's with Isabella. So she's kind of got this haze of like this new relationship haze over her. But it's like, if you let anyone see the cracks in what you're suggesting to her right now, they are immediately going to smell that you're like smell blood in the water, that you are a cop or something's wrong. Because like, it's that whole thing that Jose can get from him is that there's something wrong. And I just, in those scenes, you know, it's that great thing in like cool rewatchable movies that you've seen a million times and you're just like telling characters that you love to not do the things that define them over and over again. You're like, oh, please don't do that. But the thing that does, you love it. I love that whole bit where he starts to like go, oh shit, I need to actually switch my brain back on here instead of just thinking with my heart. But that's not who he is. And that's not who the relationship is. It's like,
that's where you get the sense that you're like, oh, he's like, not confused, but he's getting in too deep and he's like blurring the lines between both roles in both directions. Yeah. He's like starting to lose his grip on this like dual thing that he's doing. When he comes back to Miami is just the greatest thing of all. Like, we were making moves on each other. Like, you had to make a move on the boss girl. We're making moves on each other.
That is because I love Jamie Foxx's Tubbs is like deadly serious.
Yes.
He's like, you're making moves on the boss's woman. We're making moves on each other. And he's just like, I'll fucking kill you. Are you serious? There's just such like the turn of his voice, the tone. It's just the best. We're making moves on each other. And even just when he calls him and he's like, I'm on my way back.
Right.
Like, no, you're in trouble. Like I'm in trouble with my best mate.
Right.
You know, like you said, the walk of shame in a go fast boat, 90 miles
That's
through the ocean.
Fast walk of shame. And you know, to your point about like, sort of like the perfection of like outfit, like, the, like, oh, do we want to see someone's bra strap fall off? Do we want to see that? Like, I noticed that like when he gets out of the boat, his whole shirt is covered in sweat, which obviously makes sense because he's been sitting in the boat and like obviously he's wearing linen and he's gonna sweat. But I'm like, yeah, that like that just adds like the tiniest layer of like, this guy just drove back. Like it just makes me feel like there's not a wardrobe person like putting a fresh shirt on him. Like it's like the real thing. He's like sweaty and just jumping out of the boat and going and doing his thing.
And his hair is windswept because Michael Mann probably made him drive around, like do laps around outside of his house, like that's in Southern Florida, in the boat to like, A, get a sweat and B, look windswept. And so when he comes back in, it's all perfect. Like, I've got to have a shower. I've got to like smarten up. We're going to go see Fujima. Like A, they're going to go see Fujima. B, they're about to see their boss. And so it's like twofold. I've got to actually have myself. I've got to have my shit together. And I can't just, you know, and now like, what's so funny in the context of the story in that moment also is like how much has happened. Like you think about it, like there's these two couple of cops, their crew, they've now like they're in the depths of like an international drug, you know, smuggling conspiracy. And it's so crazy what's happened. But like, I love that his big thing is, you making moves on my toes, girl.
Like, I know. Well, like, I mean, that's going to screw their asses very badly if it gets out. But this is also the point of the movie where they just, I'm a dumb child, but like they keep just talking. They're just like, they just keep being like, the loads, got to get the loads. And they're just like, loads, 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 loads. And I'm just like, Loads. They said loads.
This is your Beavis and Butthead moment. Stop saying loads. We're going to go in another load. And you're like, oh, God, just stop like, talking. Can we use another word, like, guys? I've been in ISO for way too long. If you guys say load one more time, I'm out. I'm stopping this podcast. I'm out of this movie. It's done.
It's like, maybe I've just been watching the movie too much, but I'm like, you sure say loads a lot. I'm sorry. I'm like a dumb 12-year-old boy. That is my brain capacity.
You're on the right show. I'm with you. I'm right with you.
God, no, I can't stop laughing.
Oh my God. But you know, that like I think and the next scene is I can't decide what I like more. And I don't know if I like this scene the most. I think I toggle between when Trudy sees Sunny and Isabella together for the first time when they go to Jose's disco and she's dancing and they're watching him dance and she sees them and she's like, this idiot's in love with her. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a problem. Like, she kind of like, that's what's so great about Naomi Harris. She's like, she doesn't say anything. She doesn't need to say anything, but both girls, Gina and Naomi in that scene, they're like, that's a problem. That's going to be bad news. And that whole thing of like, I don't know, she doesn't tell Tubbs, but like, I don't know if she tells him or she doesn't want to distract him. And especially in the director's definitive cut, like it makes sense that she's like, I don't really want to add this another wrinkle into your
it's like
concern.
He's stressed out enough.
I'm just going to kind of pace myself. I'm going to pace myself with the feedback. But I think I genuinely love that idea that she's just like, this is a bad idea. This is going to be a big problem. But we just kind of, we're so deep that if I try and break it up, it's going to cause a rift between those guys. It's going to cause a disruption to the team. It's going to be something wrong. So like, I kind of have to suck it up, but I love her awareness in that moment. She's like looking over it and she's like, oh, just like she was in that first scene. She's like, oh, this is going to be a big problem. This is going to be really bad. This is going to end badly. And yes, it's really terrific. Wait,
is that the scene where Jose sees them?
Yeah, it's the same scene.
That's like terrifying where like he's just like his like it keeps getting closer and then it's just like close-ups of like hands and dancing and like and it's just
and
like
hips,
his face and then
and backs and hands and twists and then him just looking with this absolutely laser focus. Like this is like whatever she has done in the past to get clients and do this and play silly. There's something more serious between these two.
Yeah. It's big trouble. Also I, and you know, and he's a disco man. So this is really,
we've got a whole episode. There might be 5 episodes dedicated to that one line. There might be.
Also I realized in our episode where we talk about that, I butchered the line like 40,000 times where I said, I love discotheque. No, he says, I'm a disco man.
I'm a disco man.
So yeah. That is.
Well, that's why I've got this show, Katie. So we can mess up the lines every week and then people can correct us.
Eventually.
I'm going to get it there. After our 20.
They say that in such a terrifying way. I'm a disco man.
I'm a disco man. there is something like, you know, what do directors and casting agents say? They're like, once I've got the cast, making a movie is easy. Like, and you think about like so many movies that don't deserve to be as good, have great casts. And you're like, this doesn't deserve to be this good, but it's amazing. Like they're just like across the board, every single person. And John Ortiz is a guy who's like, he's batting 25,000 every movie that he's in, like even small things. And so those little stupid lines that should be throwaways are just loaded like shotguns. Like he gives the line and you're like, it's so delicious the way that he sounds and it's great. But then you're like, this guy will kill every person in this room. He doesn't give a crap. He's ready to kill everyone here. So good. I love that whole scene because it's like just another, that's the whole thing is like, and why I think I love Trudy's hyper awareness of what is happening in that scene is like, this idiot's in love with this girl who's really the boss's girl, but also this other guy is clearly obsessed with her and we're in this guy's place mm-hmm. in another country. None of this is good. Like none of where this is going is where we want to be right now. It's so, but like it all plays into those two key relationships. They work so well.
Right. And I don't think the movie would work as well as it did if we didn't believe those two relationships. And so I think I like the groundwork that he lays, that man lays in terms of just being like, yes, you believe these people are in love with each other, but not just in love with each other, like care for each other, like want to make sure this person lives. Like you need all of that groundwork. And that's why I think like the flower scene and the cafe scene is like something that totally could have gone into the theatrical cut, because I think it is crucial storytelling.
You can tell that you can almost tell. I feel like that's the itch. You know, he talks about like, this is my revised version a few months after a theatrical release. You can tell that almost that scene or those two scenes, are almost the reason for the revision. Because once you add those, there's other little bits and pieces you can add, you know? But I think with that scene, it's like, that actually gives way, because I feel like this is like the Tubbs cut.
Yeah, totally.
The theatrical version is the Crockett cut, so it's the Colin Farrell cut. And this, the entire revision, which is why I guess you love it so much and why I think that they both absolutely deserve to exist, is it's the Tubbs cut. It's like the one that actually gives him those crucial motivations. And you're like, for some people who are like, man, I wish I had some more Tubbs. Like, he's so great. Jamie Foxx is outstanding. Like, he just crushes every scene he's in. But it's the one where you're like, man, that cafe scene is such a hugely Michael Mann scene. It's like, it's got all of his history back to Thief. He loves a coffee shop scene where people are downloading about the motivations, basically telling you what is important in the whole story. Like, he loves a coffee shop scene like that. And that is a signature scene. And then that detail of this bad guy is so bad and he knows exactly where you are at any time of the day or night. They're two huge things for a movie whose major villain is on screen. Would he be on screen for 4 minutes for the whole movie?
Montoya.
Oh, yeah, Montoya.
No. Yeah, it's not a lot. It's like 10 max. Like
yeah. It's 5 to 10 minutes maximum that he's on scene. So like, yeah, that's such a like a, I know where you are always. So even when you're not watching, he knows where you are. So cool.
Yeah. Do we need to touch at all on the limo scene?
I think we do, but maybe it deserves its own episode.
Its own thing. I know this is going to come up again. It's not going to go uncovered.
Yeah. So just like, maybe we can just like glance on it, but like I almost want to do like a whole episode on just that sequence of like when they meet up and they do like that whole Jose, I'm a disco guy, like all that stuff. I want to do that whole, maybe that's a whole episode where we just talk about that sequence of time in the movie, because I just love like, it's like, you know, it's one of those acts of the movie where all the stakes and all these things are converging and everyone's there and all the players are there together at the same time and everything's getting ratcheted up and the tension's getting ratcheted up, but everyone's still having fun. It's like everyone's still having a really good time and it's all about to go to hell. And so I kind of maybe want to do that as
a whole
thing.
Okay, let's do that. Let's plan on that, because I love that idea, because there's so much good shit in
so
that.
Much good.
And it's so funny because it's just like, what is it, like 20, 10 minutes, like in the middle of the movie? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like, there's so much going on, Blake.
Oh, I want to talk about it all. Now,
so much
also,
happening.
We will accept confessionals of people who saw this movie and who have closed the window for where their driver is in a limo and had ravenous sex in the back. We really like, I'm in. If you want to privately DM us, let us know. But if you were influenced by this movie to do that with a partner, please get in touch, because I think that that's perfect fodder for it. For that whole 10 minutes.
We take party reports. We take confessions. You will be kept anonymous.
Yeah.
Always. So.
Always. We keep our sources anonymous on One Hit Minute Productions, and but we will read all of your floridly delivered confessions.
Yes, I mean, if you want to send like a whole, I'll read it. I might laugh, but I'll read it.
I'm not kidding. We'll both read it. I'm not kidding. Mail at oneheatminute.com is where you can email us at any time or find Katie and I in our DMs. Slide right in there. Limo confessionals is the hashtag.
I don't have any limo confessionals.
I don't either. I don't either. I was trying to think. I was like, do I have a limo? No, I don't. Well, that's a failure. That's a failure. By the time this show ends, and by the time this isolation ends, we both need a limo confessional.
Maybe in like 2 years.
In like 2 years. When the show's like for 2 years, we're like, okay, this is our actual limo confessionals. Yeah. Man, Jesus. Too funny. This has been a banger. This has been a banger talking to you. We tried to be serious. We really tried for like 5 minutes.
We try and we fail, but it's okay.
Fine. We will get there. We'll get there. This has been another episode of Miami Nice. Thank you so much. Following us, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at One Blake Minute. Katie?
I'm at Katie Walsh STX.
And if you hashtag Miami Nice and tag us in, we'll talk to you on Twitter. But we love all of your reports, all of your chatter, and we're going to have some guests soon. Amazing crew of guests that are lining up to chat with us. So we're going to have some
people
guests
soon. People are clamoring. People are clamoring.
We have,
because
we have,
they love this movie and they are pissed that we haven't asked them yet. And we are in the process.
We will get all those folks who are pissed and some of them who are already buying blazers. You're in. Okay. You will be in. We can't wait to talk to you. This show is not going anywhere soon. It's not like a short run. We're going to keep this going because we're having too much fun doing it. And we're going to talk to all those guests. We're going to talk soundtracks. We're going to talk coverage. We're going to talk the releases. We're going to talk to the people who loved this movie from the outset. We want to talk to those folk. We're going to talk to Needle Drops. We're going to do a whole soundtrack episode, which may not even be able to be allowed to be video because YouTube will just kick the episode off. So we're going to do all that stuff. We can't wait. And we can't wait to be back with you very soon.
Listen, send us like money or something and I'll just like Zoom watch a movie with you and talk shit about the Needle Drops. Like, I'll do that.
Look. If you see every episode, there is a donation link that you can do. I'll make sure I put that on there. And if you wanted to, and look, if you really want a live watch, we can do that. We can do a live watch.
We might set up a live commentary. Yeah.
Okay. After this episode drops, which will be a Friday Australian time, which will be like late evening Thursday, the US time. When this episode drops, you can check it out. If you're into it, Katie and I, like a week or so later after this episode drops, we'll organize a live commentary session and we'll do it for the theatrical cut and the director's cut if you want, or both, whichever. We'll figure it out, but we'll be into it.
Yes. This movie begs for commentary. All right. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, dude. See you soon.
See you soon.